Do you know what cultural hubs looked like 100 years ago? And which part of Minsk could have become a local Montmartre? In this podcast, we're going to dive into the history of Minsk of the last 100 years by walking through its powerful spots where creative and active community were hanging out at different times. Let's warm up the time machine, fasten the seatbelts, and we're ready to go. To start the tour, let's look back to 1915. It's the very edge of the World War I. Hundreds of refugees are looking for a shelter in big cities. Just in a year, the population of Minsk increases from 100,000 to 250,000. Apartment rent almost doubles and railways can hardly cope with providing people with necessary goods. Minsk citizens are the first to face hunger, speculations, and huge queues. In the summer of 1915, the Belarusian Society of Assistance to War Victims opens up in the house at Zakharievskaya Street 24. It's next to the present building of Minsk City Executive Committee. You can notice books and brochures in Belarusian in the windows. Refugees and soldiers can find there a place to stay, get free lunches and underwear, which is also soon there. Some even manage to find work. There are about 50 people in the Aid Society. It is led by the Belarusian writer Anton Levitsky, also known as Yadvigin Shah, and his daughter Vanda. In these difficult times, members of the society take care not only of bread and shelter for the needy, but of food for thought as well. They organize a club of Belarusian creative intellectuals and organize parties for refugees and youngsters. Shortly, a group of activists moves to a wooden house near the Red Church. In the large room, they open a canteen with home-cooked meals, and social and cultural activities are boiling in the other rooms. The place is named Belarusian Khatka, and it quickly becomes iconic and popular among young, energetic community. The poet Alis Harun lives here and organizes a bookstore. Jerzy Plosik founds the Acute newspaper, in which important masterpieces of Belarusian literature, such as Pinskaya Shlyakhta by Dunin Marcinkevich and Simon the Musician by Jakub Kolas, are published for the first time. Every Saturday, young Minskers gather in the Khatka. The guests are warming the atmosphere by singing folk songs. Then the elders recite poems, both their own and someone else's. The works by famous Belarusian poets Yanka Kupala, Tsiotka and Maxim Bogdanovich are heard more often than others. Then the dancing begins. School children and adults together dance traditional Lyavoniha and Yurochka. As remembered by one of the activists who visited the Khatka as a little girl, the national poet Zmitrok Badulya never danced, but gave everyone funny nicknames and made a lot of jokes. At one of these evenings, to the great amazement of the schoolchildren, Maxim Bogdanovich appeared there himself. The public heard some of his legendary poems here for the first time. At the end of the evening, everyone asked riddles to each other, played games, and left feeling happy and looking forward to the next Saturday. In 1917, the actors Zhdanovich, Buinitsky and Falsky founded the Society of Belarusian Drama and Comedy in this famous house and premiered Paulinka by Kupala and The Winter Evening by Eliza Azheshka. Later, the troupe under the leadership of Zhdanovich, which also included some of the girls and boys from Khatka, toured around Belarus and played a significant role in the development of the Belarusian professional theatre. Although time and history did not spare the wooden house near the church, the inspiration and dedication of its inhabitants helped many young people of that time to realize themselves as Belarusians and pass this knowledge to the next generations of burning hearts. And their hard work in the field of literature and theater further influenced the development of all Belarusian culture as we know it today. Let's fast forward to post-war Minsk. On the 3rd of July 1944, Soviet troops liberate the capital of Belarus from the Nazi invaders. The city center is basically ruins, interlaced with barbed wire and spotted with trenches. 3 months later, the citizens of Minsk start to rebuild the city almost from scratch. At the end of 1944, the national poet of Belarus, Jakub Kolas, returns to the capital from evacuation. Together with his family, he settles in a small wooden house transported from the suburbs during the war for the needs of the German hospital. Colas's family doesn't choose this house by chance. It is located in a secluded courtyard behind the monumental building of the National Academy of Sciences, where the poet has been working as vice president from the very opening. In that house, which will eventually become a landmark place for literary community, Colas not only writes, but also does some social activities. The popular writer constantly receives letters from ordinary Belarusians asking for help and support. He even has some of them over. He is a gentle and understanding person, and he can hardly say no. There is less time left for creativity, but it really feels like working in a new place for Colas. Here he finishes the poem Rybakova Chata, The Fisherman's Hut, and the trilogy Na Rostanyach. The old wooden house is rebuilt several times. Being born into a peasant family, Colas enjoys gardening in his spare time. Unlike Janka Kupala, known for his love of noisy companies, Colas is known to be a home bird. However, he meets friends, writers and poets at home with pleasure. Mikhail Slinko, Petrus Broka, Petro Hlebka, Kondrat Krapiva and Janka Maur are frequent visitors. In a cozy atmosphere, over a glass of homemade drinks, the writers discuss literature and the future of Belarus. Younger colleagues also visit the writer's house. Janka Bryl, Ivan Milish and Ivan Shamekin come to the matter to have a cup of tea, discuss the ideas of their new works and get a piece of advice. The sculptor Zair Asgur is also a frequent guest here. Colas always treated him with tenderness and supported financially during his studies. When the writer dies, Asgur expresses his deep gratitude in the monumental ensemble, which is now placed at Jakub Colas Square in the center of Minsk. And the house behind the Academy of Sciences, which for many years has been the center of the cultural life of the city, will become a museum. Now let's move to Minsk of the 1960s and 80s. The Soviet economy is experiencing rapid growth due to the development of heavy industries, the military, processing and chemical ones. The standard of living rises, and not only wages increase, but queues in shops do as well. People queue up for everything, from refrigerators and TVs to clothes and sausages. Consumer industry and mechanical engineering simply cannot cope with the needs of the population. After the Khrushchev thaw, public and political life enters a period of stagnation for a long period of 20 years. But even in such conditions, creativity continues to unite people, and the famous Rakovskaya suburb at this time even turns into a real Montmartre in Minsk. The first art workshops appeared on the corner of Dmitrieva and the Dobrynaya streets after the war, when they were taken by the national artist Witold Belinitsky-Birulya and the sculptor Sergei Dashkevich. In the 70s, the leaders of the Belarusian revival, artists Yevhen Kulik, Mykola Kupava, Viktor Markovets, Mikhail Sramanyuk and many others, settle here and open their studios. A really strong community appears here, and life in Montmartre starts to bustle. The famous graphic artist Yevhen Kulik creates there his iconic illustrations for the poem A Song About the Bison by Mykola Husovsky, as well as the portraits of the great Belarusian enlighteners. The artist Mykola Kupava illustrates Belarusian fairy tales and writes famous portraits, thanks to which we now know what Princess Mindaug and Vytaut looked like. Irrepressible artists Viktor Markovets and Dalia Smarochkin organize motorcycle ride to the places of life and work of the legendary Jazeb Drozdovich to restore his legacy for the history of art. And the workshop of Mikhail Sramanyuk is literally bristling with ethnographic materials. During his expeditions, he creates more than 130 reconstructions of traditional dresses and writes dozens of travel diaries. All these artists, as well as some scholars and writers, gather in the legendary studio of Yevhen Kulik, which is located under the roof. Among others, the writer Vladimir Karatkevich and the archaeologist Mikhail Charnyovsky, who are also concerned with the issues of the Belarusian cultural revival, come over. The attic becomes a real brain center, a creative cauldron in which some of the best ideas of the 80s were brewed. The energy of the older brothers in craft is absorbed by their young colleagues. Nearby there is the art school, whose students often skip lessons in the old cinema Belarus or with their sketchbooks right on the street making sketches of the upper town and imitating the masters. In the Rakowska suburb, the spirit of creativity and romance is still alive. Walking through it, you can easily imagine how the smell of acrylic paints and oil is mixed with the aroma of fresh pastries from the neighboring bakery. And in the courtyards and squares, young artists laugh, argue, and create their masterpieces. Now imagine Minsk in the mid-90s. Kiosks and stalls grow like mushrooms after rain. Among the chewing gums, Coca-Cola, and fake watches, the first CDs with Russian and foreign pop music appear. Fans of alternative music gather around rare shops of music lovers. The symbols of the new time are CD players, jeans, and the first mobile phones, and the feeling that everything is rapidly flowing and changing. Young people look for self-expression. Minsk youngsters, hyped up for alternative culture, unexpectedly find their place in the courtyards behind the modern shopping center Riga. In the student canteen at Bedi Street 4, a new club reservation is opened, which later becomes a real urban legend. The art director of the club is notable for his musical tastes and democratic views. It was him who first came up with the formative parties, in which techno raves follow the performances of rock bands on the same night. Sometimes all of this is even accompanied by artistic actions. Punks and electronic musicians coexist here peacefully. Long-standing enemies are united by the sweet atmosphere of a place free from prejudice. The audience rejoices. The new times are here. In one night, up to 400 people could get through the reservation. And the most popular bands were the hooligans NRM and Nira Dubil. It was the reservation where newcomers, who are now well-known to Belarusians, got their start in life. Ляпис, Лепреконсы, musicians of the future Кассиопея band, and many others. The reservation was closed unexpectedly after a rageful article in one of the newspapers. The A club that was opened instead could not really replace the legend and did not last long. Today, in the Prate place, you, like 20 years ago, can taste a hot soup and porridge with a cutlet surrounded by the students from neighboring dormitories. The visitors of the glass-bottled buyback centers from the late 90s, hidden in the courtyards near Площа Перемоги, would hardly believe that in 10 years a completely different people would hang out at this place. In October 2009, in the building at Prospekt Niezalezhnosti 37A, a modern art gallery, as a letter that exists in Belarusian language only, was opened, and it quickly became a place of attraction for artists, writers, musicians, young entrepreneurs, and just creative people. A cozy gallery turns into a platform for experiments with painting, photography, and installations, where many new authors manifest themselves. The curators of the gallery show to the visitors that you can not only look at an art object, but you can also listen to it, touch it, and sometimes take part in its creation. Soon in the same building, the first hipster bar Malako opens. The trademark of the bar is monthly bar jamming, when local celebrities become bartenders. On these parties, there is no place to swing a cat. In the tiny bar during hot and close dances, a lot of friendships and creative collaborations are established. Malako shows everyone how to party in a new way, and this culture will be inherited by fashionable establishments that appear over the years at Kastryshnitska and Zybitska streets. The bar, gallery, and the nearby bookstore function as one unit. You can come here for a morning coffee with a book, work at a table near a large window, then get to the opening of an exhibition or literary discussion, and eventually find yourself dancing with a glass of wine to the vinyl music. At that time, Minsk had not yet heard about the creative spaces and art clusters, but the popularity of the gallery clearly showed the residents' request for non-standard and fresh places. Nowadays, Minsk dwellers do not have a shortage of cultural hubs, and the number of events occurring in one evening confronts visitors with a difficult choice. And all of this is happening thanks to the bold and active people who like to change the city for the better. At any time and in any circumstances, passionate about the idea, they can create wonders. And who knows, maybe the next cool place in your favorite city will be opened by you.